Welcome to The Griot's Remedy, a Book Loudly production, part of Pecan Tree Creative Solutions. This is where authors, coaches, and mental health professionals gather around the mic to explore themes brought to life in fictional works. What will they pull out of the bag on this episode? Keep it locked right here to find out. The Griot's Remedy is designed to be an entertaining and insightfully creative exploration of life issues through the lens of characters written in fiction and creative nonfiction stories, and excerpts of full versions of scripts written for the stage or film. Thoughts, comments, and observations by the host, coaches, counselors, and therapists are not to be construed as personal advice or direction. Here is your host, author, publisher, and award-winning playwright, E. Claudette Freeman.
We are at episode 3. That means we are halfway through season 2 of The Griot's Remedy. Have really touched on some very interesting things in this season so far. I've learned how to rethink how you deal with difficult parent relationships, specifically mother-daughter relationships, and not to be a rescuer. It's okay to let people be all right in their discomfort. You don't have to jump in there and save the day, which is a good thing, because I don't own any Superman capes or, you know, any bat gloves or, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So that's a beautiful thing. Welcome, Wina and Renee. Glad to have you back with us for episode 3. You ready?
Yes.
Glad to be back.
Glad to be back.
So let me introduce our panelists, who always kind of just leave me speechless. Make me really think about some things every time. I don't think you should leave a podcast with pages of notes of stuff you want to take back and journal with. But I think it's a beautiful thing that I do, and I hope others are taking that same kind of insight and infusion of wonderful information and knowledge. So first up is Wina Wise. She's a licensed couple and family therapist, certified professional coach, clinical writer, and public speaker in the DC metropolitan area. She's the owner of Covenant Counseling and Consulting. I am always happy when I get through that thing without, you know, because that's a tongue twister for you right there. And Covenant Coaching Academy, with over 15 years of experience helping individuals, couples, and families achieve the personal and relationship results they desire. You can visit her at covenanttherapy.com to purchase her in-home session services, schedule an appointment, or talk to her about booking for your next event. And next up is Ms. Renee Audrey, who is a board-certified professional life coach, counselor, author, and meditation and mindfulness trainer. She holds an MBA in business management and organization and has over 30 years of experience as a business professional with expertise in relationships, training, leadership, caregiving, and organization. She's the CEO of Meditational Moment and Meditational Academy, established to counsel, educate, train, and inspire all individuals to incorporate meditation in their lives as a catalyst for God alignment. You can connect with Renee at meditationalmoment.com for bookings and appointments. So ladies, today, as I mentioned at the end of our last episode, we're going to jump into a little bit of barbershop talk. Mm. And so I see we've got some interesting things that you guys have identified that we're going to be listening for in this excerpt: misaligned values, promiscuity versus monogamy. That alone is like, yeah. Mm. Outside influences, allowing others to impact your romantic relationships. Mm-hmm. That seems to be like a thing to do. It's almost kind of like when you get into a relationship with somebody, you get into a relationship with them and all of your outside influences.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Well, it takes a village.
Yeah.
Generational wisdom, guilt and acceptance, relational dysfunction and negativity bias. So that's what we're going to be listening for in this episode. That's a lot. That's a lot, but that's a beautiful thing. And so this piece is called "And Daddy Came Home." Let me get us set up here. There we go. This piece is called "And Daddy Came Home." Men in the barbershop, everything is up for discussion. The chat in this particular scene tackles baby mama drama, news headlines of the day, and offer varying wisdom in the midst about marriage and some other things. In this scene, the men end up talking about their choice in women and how those choices affect lives, vision, and more. This excerpted clip is from a live stage reading of the piece by the former Heritage Ensemble Theater Company in Richmond, Virginia. And the cast in this clip is Rakeem Laws, Tony Q. Cobb, E.Q. Sheffield, Javon Branch, and Akeen Smith. So here we go with And Daddy Came Home.
As long as we've known Sheila, she's been attitude and temper. Mm-hmm. And now you got baby mama drama with the woman that put D-R-A-M-A in drama? Unbelievable.
No, right? But you know, truth be told, since you know it's just us, I gave her plenty of reason to hate me, man. I was out there. Different bed every night before I got home to her.
Sure glad you grew out that foolishness. Mm-hmm. That girl would have killed you and fed your parts to the dogs for dinner.
Yes, man. But can I tell y'all something? Yo, man, I hope you don't mind hearing my business. But check this, y'all. I'm walking to the door one night, right? Just changed clothes in the car, so Felicia's perfume is off me. My cell phone rings. Some girl I hadn't seen in like a year calling me crying, and all I heard was, I positive tested.
Ooh. Then you come calling me to pick you up. Like, what was I supposed to do?
But man, if you didn't, the way I was feeling at that moment, it would have caused you to ID my body. Because I couldn't even imagine telling Sheila, my family, my son, that I was HIV positive.
Hey, JD, you still keep condoms in that cabinet drawer. Maybe he need another lesson on how to use properly for protection. But Pop had to be reminded that just because it makes you feel good, don't mean it ain't bad for you. But look here, cuz, if you need that condom lesson, I'll pull one out for you. Discretion plus a condom. Remember, they go hand in hand. You got it? Discretion, condom, condom, discretion.
Boy, give me 50 feet, boy. Give me 50 feet.
Hey, you did get tested, didn't you?
Yeah, negative. But you know, that was enough to make me think about some choices, man. It was not to look for petty ways to talk to Jerry about sex, you know. Mm-hmm. I had to come straight at him.
Right. Well, you think you don't make any sense to see your son enough now? If you had to tell Sheila you were HIV positive or had anything she didn't give you,
and she ain't gonna give you nothing she couldn't buy at the mall.
Listen, man. I just want her to get over everything that I did and everything that I was. And just let me be there for my son. She's not trying to hear that. Every time I see her, I immediately shoot her for the game. But lately, when I step out on that field, it's like, what game are we playing again?
You know, you sound about like them Miami Dolphins. They suiting up, but they don't know how to play the game.
I'm glad they stay out of my Dolphins. They whoop them bad. Mr. D, you've been defending the Dolphins since I was a little kid. That's because they've had some good years. And that's what you got to remember about that woman, Pug. Whatever happens between you and your woman, don't you, if you don't get anything, you get this. Women hang on to the good years. That's why they hate us so much when things go bad. They ain't mad about the times you did wrong. They mad because you stopped the times you were doing right. That's the same reason we get mad with God. No. Not because he doesn't answer our prayers, but because he doesn't do it or how we want him to all the time. Stop suiting up for the game, man. Start coaching your team to get it where you want it to be. Because like it or not, as long as Gerald Jr. is on your child and Sheila his mama, they part of the team. Now, why in good name of the Lord you went and got the meanest female on earth to be your baby mama, I don't know. But she on the team.
I hear you. But man, listen, how do you talk to somebody that got the gun cocked and loaded every time they see you? Even when you're doing the right thing.
You ever watch people with fireplaces? They heat up a fire or cool it down a fire by stroking the wood, moving it around. Mm-hmm. You got to figure out how to move that fire around. From Ann to David to J.D. Reynolds to you and Malcolm. Man, fellas, we've been trying to handle the female fire by cooking it out. And that's why so many of us burned up now.
You ain't never lied about that.
Very improper. Right now, chapter 4 is a little something that says, keep your heart with all diligence, because out of it springs the issues of life. We miss that. Because we don't believe we put our heart into things. Then we end up with issues. Baby mama drama. Because we didn't keep our heart or theirs with all diligence.
I receive that, Jay. Man, I just want to stop fighting long enough to see my son more than just Friday night through Sunday evening.
Now, he told you to stroke the fire. Now, not in such a way that she thinks you're trying to holler, but in a way so she listens to you. Mm-hmm. Make it plain, preacher, so that the common knucklehead can understand what you say.
Yes. Like this. Lesson one, take notes. When she walk up to you, her mouth all twisted, her eyes all crossed, ignore it. Because that's what the man on TV calls junk behavior. Ignore it. Say something like, you know, Sheila, I don't know what made me go looking for somebody else, but the prettiest woman I've seen in a long time had already honored me by even looking my way. Your new man is blessed, and I hope he's respecting you. Then, pass the peace.
Pass the peace. Yeah, man. Give her a little church hug. And then you ask her, do you need me to get Jerry back early this weekend?
And what if she still give me attitude? Ignore it. Keep stroking the fire. Sooner or later, it will calm down. You smile and you say, I see the day's a little rough right now. We can talk to later. Take care. Oh, just in case I never say it, I pray for you. Then, y'all loving up on your son like you always do. Sooner or later, she'll realize she's arguing by herself.
Yes. That sounds good in theory, but with Sheila, it may take a little longer. I remember when that girl used to be a cheerleader when you all played what? 85-pound octopus? She was meaner than a rattlesnake. But when you get in people's head with peace, a little sugar, some kindness, then they see the truth. Well, what needs to get in the dolphin's head for them to do a little something? There you go again on my dolphins. They'll be all right. They started out a little slow. But the playoffs are a vision that has faded. Oh, wait.
Hey, what about you, sir? Who's your team?
Well, used to be the Dolphins. Now they're my number two team. My number one team are the Atlanta Falcons. That's my hometown.
I knew I hadn't seen you here before. Atlanta's home, huh?
Now it is. But I'm originally from here, though.
Everybody's moving to Atlanta or Houston. I've been thinking about making a move myself.
Change the city won't change your problems, man. You deal with your situations where they're at and where you at.
Yes, sir, I know. Besides, I couldn't leave without my kids and my mom. And you know my mom. Oh, I can visit you, but I got my own ranch to tend to.
You know, your mama watched too much Big Valley and Bonanza or something.
Why you want to go talk about my mama? You know you still trying to holler at her. What? JD knows something about hollering at somebody. They don't teach that in the deacon's ministry, do they? Well, you need a card lesson, too.
Oh, shut up.
Daddy J, is that why my mama been a deaconess all these years? I mean, Mama Curl went on to glory days a while ago.
Shut up, man.
Daddy J, how long you own this place, man? I know since me and Mama was like this big. My dad coaches bring us up in here all the time.
Uh-huh. And we used to have to tie Malcolm to the chair. You remember that, son?
Hey, that's child abuse. Cutting a little boy's head off without his permission.
I've had a shop for about 32, 33 years, but not here. Started out in Jackson Ward. We just closed that last year. I started my first shop a year after my father died. He used to own some grocery stores in Jackson Ward, Southside, up around Church Hill. Mama swore he gave away more than he sold, but I guess she was wrong. He left a wife and three kids in a good position. He used to tell us, God warned me to leave you and your children something to eat, some place to stay, and some sense to keep doing the same thing for everybody behind you. Yeah, that's biblical.
What you think about that, Daddy J? Republicans know the Bible too?
Like I said, when the Democrats offer me something better, I slap their voter's registration card right here.
J.D., I think you should have kept that shop in Jackson Wool. I hate how they pushing everything and everybody black out of Jackson Wool. Mm-hmm. It used to be something, a city within a city. Yeah. Black men sharper than a blade, and the prettiest women, oh, they are going from spot to spot. Yeah. Beautiful black people on the town. Now all they telling those beautiful black people is to hit the road.
Yeah.
It's not just Jackson Ward. It's black cities in almost every state. Watch the catchphrases. Eminent domain. Mm-hmm. Revitalization. Mm-hmm. It's really gentrification. Mm-hmm. That's why Atlanta's selling better than South Florida. Better and better every day.
Atlanta does have its pluses, though. Cost of living, celebration of culture, better schools, a pride in the chocolate city status.
Hmm. You work for the Atlanta Tourism Office.
Oh, no, no, man. No, man. The young man seemed interested, that's all. ATL is the kind of place you raise a family to raise a family. White folks aren't the only ones there that leave long years of a good family status. You ought to leave children something, no matter where you live. And listen, Malcolm, we've already talked about this. And we can continue the chain of shops in Atlanta, Houston, wherever. But you can continue your chain of problems in those same cities. Mm-hmm. Sometimes relationships hit tough spots. You either got to get tough or you get hurt. Then you have to be man enough and grown enough to do what it takes to get it.
The other day, you full of relationship advice today, ain't
you? I just feel bad for y'all. It's almost like young couples get married or hook up with breaking up as a safety net or automatic plan B. My parents were married 70 years before Dad died.
Yep.
I was married 42 years before the Lord took Carol home. The biggest thing in our marriage, the one thing that nearly took us out, became the one thing that kept us stronger. And this was the fact we couldn't have children.
You couldn't tell that the way the kids were always around, especially me.
See, Carol knew your mom was working all the time, going to school, and she admired that. She just wanted to be there.
Y'all were like second parents to me. I appreciate that, and I know my mama still does.
Man, Miss Carol was like that. She didn't believe anybody needed to be home by themselves at the school, you know? Nobody had to eat a sandwich for dinner, and if we fell asleep before somebody picked us up,
then just come by in the morning and take them home to school.
That was her. She said, J.D., we got a house full of children after all, you know that? They all allow some of the time, and I'm all right with that.
I don't know who took her dying heart, you, mama, or me? She was my mama's rock, man. I only remember seeing my mama hurt and crying like that once before, when I was little.
And Carol and Celia used to catch the bus downtown every weekend to Woolworth and then the movies, like two little girls, when I was with every knucklehead in the neighborhood playing football. Then me and your daddy pub would line them up and bring them here for haircuts. Mm-hmm. Usually the ones that didn't have daddies or their daddies weren't working.
Then we would go to Dairy Queen.
Yeah, baby. That was it. Chocolate and with all the twisted ice cream cone. That was it. Surprise, Dairy Queen still there. Southside still there too. I guess revitalization hasn't swept through there yet to drive us out.
You know what, Mr. D? I think we just need to give the battle in Jackson Wood a chance to work itself out. Where we were, the rent was going up so high, we would have to overcharge to the regular and new clients just to make ends meet. Mm-hmm. We didn't want to do that.
Yeah, we figured out you would have to charge $8 more per cut at least.
Oh, that's messed up. Mm-hmm.
So you guys are building a chain of stores.
Oh, Malcolm building a chain of stores. I'm retiring after this year.
Now, didn't you say you were retiring last year?
And I meant it. I hung on to give Malcolm a minute to deal with his marriage.
Y'all doing all right, man? We're better. Still got some work to do. Leisha's a good woman. She supports me and she handles the house, our son. She even keeps the money here and at home tight. All of that used to make me smile. Then we started having arguments about her preaching and arguments about talking to her about my plans and vision.
I don't know what happened. Before you knew it, we couldn't even agree on stupid stuff like what time we were eating dinner. Well, you started listening to them boys that couldn't keep a woman if she was glued to them.
Uh-huh.
Now, if I know what they were saying.
Malisha running things in here. Who wearing the pants in your house, man?
Stupid is as stupid talks.
Now ask for your advice, yeah, and
don't ask a lawyer how to perform brain surgery.
Mm-hmm.
If you got a wife.
If he ain't got a wife, he ain't never had a wife, he can't tell you what to do with one.
Leisha started bringing that stuff up because you put her in a position to question her position with you.
What you mean I put her in a position to question her position?
Man, you made her think about whether or not marrying you and putting some personal desires and some spiritual cards on hold was the right thing to do.
Then she started blaming you for something she was really okay with. All because you listened to some knucklehead who don't have a clue. When you and Leisha met, she was in church. She wasn't just doing church. She was in church, teaching Sunday school, involved in evangelism. And if I'm not mistaken, she was just acknowledging her call to preach.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she had. But I never asked her to give any of that up.
Yeah, but man, but you started to second guess the same qualities that you appreciated in that woman. And the qualities that you were praying for. God, faithful to Christ and to you,
mm-hmm.
a good manager, a good mother,
mm-hmm.
who wants a house full of kids. A hard worker, independent, and able to take care of you and your dream. Now, you want to let some jealous dudes tell you what you got ain't good.
Wow. You want to let some jealous dude tell you what you got ain't good. That's a whole mouthful right there.
Yeah, interesting place to end.
Yes. So, and daddy came home. So let's start at the end, because I think that's, I think that was a wonderful piece of wisdom right there. You're letting jealous people tell you about your marriage, people.
Yeah, well, I was pleasantly surprised by that wisdom that was being passed around. And it struck me, first off, I felt like we were eavesdropping on a conversation that we're not necessarily always invited into. Barbershop talk tends to be
Boys
sacred.
Club. Yeah, yeah.
And I respect that. but men don't always unpack their experiences and relationships the way women do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a generalization, but not always. And so to hear that mix of light banter and teasing and talking about sports infused with this idea that when somebody's going through something, we still need to show up and encourage, we need to listen, and we need to protect each other by giving information that came through in that moment when the young guy was talking about his marriage, and yeah. some of the older guys jumped in and said, oh, we've seen this before. Mm-hmm. Been there, done that, got the t-shirt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I love the whole setting of, the what the men talk about, and how they speak into each other's lives in good ways and in negative ways, in the sense of the things that they were talking about, the lessons I need to teach you to deceive, the lessons I need to teach, it's like, okay, I'm going to show you how to, protect. What was the words he used to in regards to the condom? Be discreet. Uh-huh. In your using of the condom and in you stepping out on that one that you made love. And, that's not the right way and the positive direction that we want to give someone, but just know that this is what's being exposed, and we have to learn how to take what is good for us and that's going to help us and not what's going to hurt us. And that's in our relationships, because not only was she giving that advice to one person, but just think about all the other people that were listening and how it could negatively impact them in a way to think it's okay. That it's mm-hmm. okay to step out, that it's okay to use a condom, just be discreet, make sure you don't get caught, And so listening to both sides, the positive and the negative, and just knowing how to take what is good with you and leave the rest, because we want to be better in those conversations. We want to learn from other yeah. people's experiences.
Yeah, I agree with that, Renee. We do want to learn from other people's experiences and not just from often we listen to other people's experiences and we immediately get in that defensive posture where we're like, okay, well, that couldn't be me. Well, that's not me. Right. But there's always some wisdom to be gleaned from how somebody else got through a relationship, a hard place in a relationship, or, you know, a marriage almost ending, or, you know, something like that, because that shows that they have some life learned, but they had to employ some type of strategies that obviously could be successful. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think it's important to listen to that kind of wisdom. I definitely agree with you there. One of the things that caught me in this piece is how Malcolm and Pub and the different women that they have. Here you have Pub on this side with Sheila, who all of the men were like, is the meanest one. Not like, her. Poor baby, she's like the meanest thing in the world, you know. And then you've got Malcolm's wife who I think the one of the older guys said, this is the woman that you prayed for, right? You were very intentional in the kind of woman that you were praying for. And then you kind of, you know, when I heard that, I kind of wondered, okay, I wonder if it was the same for Pub, because clearly he couldn't have been praying, because I'm sure he didn't say, God, give me the meanest woman in the world, you know, and prepare me for her. So I think, you know, it's interesting because it speaks to who are we looking for in relationships, right? Who are we looking for in relationships? But then what are we attracting in relationships? Mm-hmm. Right. That's one of the things I often say to my son and my niece and my nephew sometimes is, when you look at your relationship resume, you can't just always look at the other people you were involved with. You kind of have to do some self-assessment and say, OK, what is it about me that keeps attracting the same kind of people?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, in that relationship with Sheila, it sounds like they had mad history. Mm-hmm, they talked mm-hmm. about Sheila being
an optimist cheerleader. So they've known
she had been a firecracker for as long as they knew her. And he has a son by her, if mm-hmm. I'm to understand yes. correctly. But he's also stepping out on her.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, well, I wonder if some of the meanness now is about the fact that it's known that he's been promiscuous and has violated the boundaries of their relationship. Even if it wasn't a marriage, now she won't let him see his son as much as he would like to. And he mentions, I just want her to forgive me for all of the things that I did in the past. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like the list was pretty long and distinguished.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm always cautious to take in how much, even if it's a group, folks say something about another person. Mm-hmm. Oh, she's so mean. I'm listening to the context and I go, oh, well, doesn't she have a right at this point to be concerned and to be a bit mean or to protect herself in right. that space?
And maybe she's not being mean. Maybe she's angry and she's defensive and that's how it comes across.
Right. 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 But still, you could see that there's something that attracts him to her or attracted mm-hmm. him to her. And we can badmouth the person and say that they have a rough exterior, but there's still something there in that relationship between him and her.
It seems to me that, you know, yes, he stepped out on her, but it seems that there is a huge level of regret. Like mm-hmm. maybe it was just this one time and maybe the circumstances around it were foolish, because he said, I want her to just get over it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it was just this thing that happened and it really wasn't my intent. And I really do love you and care about you. And I want to have, you know, relations with my son and I want things. I just need you to get over it. And well, so go ahead.
I was just going to say, Claudette, can you correct me if I'm wrong? It sounds like that's
he had a history.
That's the same guy who was saying that he, not just one person, he would sleep with many women.
Yeah.
He would shower or, you know, wipe the scent of the perfume off in the car before he walks in the door. And,
yeah. So he had a little pattern going.
Mm, yeah. Cause even the barbershop guy said, we're so glad you're out of that phase because you were doing the most. Like it was a lot going on. It was not just a one-time thing.
So now that he's out of the, phase.
Yeah.
So first, what drew you to get out? And then in you getting out, why do you think Sheila should just forget about it? Just, you know, to get over it. Like she doesn't have an opportunity to deal with her feelings, process her feelings, decide if she wants to get over it or forgive you in that space. And so now you have to deal with the consequences of your actions.
Right. So it seemed to me like, he got out of it because he had that medical scare, right? He had that possible, sexually transmitted disease scare.
Right, the call.
But the thing to me about that is you had a relationship, right? You had a relationship with this woman, and then you and this woman became parents, and that wasn't enough. There wasn't enough respect for that, for honoring that relationship, for you to stop the behavior. It took a major scare to say, how you rolling, it could potentially become dangerous for you before you decided to make that change. And it's like somebody said to him, just because it feels good to you doesn't mean it's good for you.
Right.
So it's almost like he decided, okay, you know what? The feel good might be deadly, so I ain't gonna do that anymore.
Even the way he shared out with the guys that he got that call, he was a bit flippant about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She called me a year later talking about, I'm positive. It didn't really sound like this guy was fully emotionally mature.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get into that space where he says, but it did make me think about how I need to come at the sex talk with my son head on. Mm-hmm. So there are parts of him that are evolving, like you said, Claudette, around getting this medical scare and realizing if I had brought something home to my mean and angry baby's mama or had endangered the future of being able to have access to my son, that would have impacted me. Those, you could see where his priorities were. Yeah. I want to be in my son's life, and that's becoming more and more important to me. But at the time when I was out sowing my royal oats, promiscuity was more important to me than monogamy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's true.
And that's not cool. That's not cool. You know, and even with, the medical scare, I still feel as though there was still a bit of a disregard in honoring the relationship with Sheila. It seems he was more concerned with losing his son.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But I guess that speaks to what you were saying, Weena. He was maturing in one area. You know, he wanted to be a father and he didn't want to jeopardize or lose that, but he still wasn't really to be in that headspace of being dedicated and committed to a romantic relationship with his woman, whoever that might be. Right.
And that's real talk. That's a real scenario. And it goes back to really trying to vet where a person's core values lie, because you can run into that all the time where people are more interested in being a good parent than they are in being a good partner. And they have different rules that they live by. It's okay for me to cheat as long as my partner doesn't find out, as long as I don't bring anything home, as long as it doesn't damage my credibility as a parent. You find out after a scare or something like that happens, where a person draws their boundary lines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was fun, interesting that his friends, well, the other barbershop gentlemen, they reminded him or was trying to coach him on how to deal with her. First, they said, suit up. And so you know how to play the game. So they are like, okay, this is what you have to do in regards to that. You're going to continue to be who you're going to be. They kind of like co-signed that. But then they start giving him ways in order to smooth up to Sheila, in order to be able to get her to give you your son. Just be kind, know how to talk, know how to retreat, know how to, when to jump in, when to say something, how to say it. And they're giving him, step-by-step instruction on how to get in, but in a deceptive way.
You know, I was listening to that and I was like, suit up for a game. I was like, oh, wow. That,
yeah.
I was like, okay, that sounds like a whole lot of work. That sounds like a lot of work that I gotta, you know, put on this whole, you know, I gotta put on a whole uniform and some pads and some armor and some this, that, and the other thing just to have a conversation with you, just to engage with you. That's a lot of work. Nobody wants to do that's a lot of work.
But if you want to see a son, this is the price you got to pay. Basically, that's what they were saying. This is the price you got to pay. These are things you got to do. This is, you got to swallow your pride. You got to, you know, really, basically, you know, take the cake that you cut. Yeah, take the piece of cake that you cut, swallow it, and then figure out how to get, you know, a proper piece, which is the opportunity to spend time.
Interestingly, what I didn't hear them say is you need to go to her. And you kind of need to have an accountability and forgiveness kind of conversation.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, because, you know, I think for me, if I was in Sheila's position, part of my anger would be the fact that, and we know this, everybody that knows us, whoever knows about what you were doing, several of them were probably coming to me. Right. So I'm hearing bits and pieces about what you were doing when we were together. And even probably what you're doing now that we're not together. And quite honestly, I would probably really be concerned about my son being around you and seeing that kind of behavior. Mm. Right. Because for me, I would probably have questions as to whether or not, if you couldn't honor me in a relationship, what would make me think that you would honor our son being with you? If you, like Weena said, if you decided to make that decision to go be promiscuous or to bring somebody into your place while our son is there, I would have real concerns about that. Right. So I found it very interesting that the men didn't have that conversation. You know, you need to step back and you need to be accountable to her for what you did. You know, he admitted to them that he did a whole lot of stuff, but you didn't hear them say, you need to admit that to her before you go asking for forgiveness, right?
As a marriage therapist and as someone who gets the privilege of sitting with men one-on-one often, I must say here, though, that I give a lot of latitude and grace because they don't always approach things that head on. Mm-hmm. And absolutely, this barbershop talk was very indicative of the ways they can lightly go into a subject and then generalize it and bring sports in as metaphors. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always get as deep and expressive and hard-nosed as conversations might in some other arenas. So what I love about the conversation is that somebody did actually manage to say, did you go get tested? And even as he said, yeah, I got tested as negative, I thought, I wonder if that's
if he really got tested.
Because, you know, if you are sometimes reckless enough to be promiscuous in that way, and you're taking on this attitude, like you can't believe a person is even calling you back after a year telling you that she's positive. It is also plausible that you may not even really go and get tested. And in a room full of guys at the barbershop, you're not going to say that you didn't go and get tested.
Right.
But that room of men also knows that they can only push you so far. Right. Like if they go to back you into the corner on that, then that's when all of the testosterone ratchets up and the defensiveness comes out. I'm just going to keep it real.
Yeah, no,
so you're right. I'm just watching how they navigate lightly, but then they dip into scripture and still try to encourage and say, all right, we act like we're not seriously giving our hearts away to these women, but let's come clean here. Mm-hmm. Some emotional connection is happening because you're here telling us now that you really are struggling with the lack of relationship that you're having with Sheila and your son. Mm-hmm. So when they do say suit up and, you know, kill her with kindness and come at her from a different angle, I thought, yeah, that's chess. Because this is not checkers. you tell it to a person any way that they can receive the information. And it seems obvious here that when you talk to him dead on relationally, he may not embrace that. But when you make it a symbol or a metaphor, he can go, oh, okay, I can envision that. Yeah. Got it.
Yeah.
They didn't break down the why he needs to be kinder to her.
Mm-hmm.
Why he needs to actually be accountable and then ask her, do you need me to pick him up early next weekend? Mm-hmm. Because one person did say that. Mm-hmm. Ask her, does she need more help?
Right.
They didn't break down the why. But sometimes people are not into the why. They just need to hear what to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And that's true. That's true. And one of the other things that they said, the stroke the wood and move the fire around.
Yeah.
And so I kept listening, and I think they said it a few times. And listening to that, I kept thinking, if they stroke the wood and just move the fire around, the fire's still burning.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part that they don't address.
Have mercy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not addressing, you know, what are the ways that I can show up in this relationship that will douse out that fire that I keep experiencing every time. There's no direct accountability there. You know, they're not saying pulling it up. Like you said, if you do that, then it turns into something else. Like they're not grabbing him by the shoulder and saying, listen here, you need to get your act together and you need to, you know, and all those things that we do in a space of accountability, in a space of challenge and charge. I believe it was one gentleman that said his parents were married for 70 years and he was married for 42 years until his wife, you know, passed away. Mm-hmm. And so this is the one we want to hear from. Like, what made you last in this longevity that may be able to help me? Like, that's the one we want to tune our ear to.
Right. But,
yeah.
Right. And one of the things one of them said that it seems like young couples, I think he said, get together with breaking up as a plan B.
Mm, yes. I wrote that down.
Yeah. Yeah,
I disagree with that, but that's something that older generations say about younger generations because again, younger generations feel empowered and entitled to question when things are going wrong, and they don't always feel like they're obligated to stay in a situation that no longer brings them joy or a situation that they mistakenly got themselves into.
Yeah,
there are many folks in older generations who got married and realized that the person they married, it was a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many, many women who committed suicide or contemplated committing suicide because they were stuck in roles that they did not want to fulfill in marriage, but had to make sure that there was a roof over their head and food in their children's mouths.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little more nuance to that than young people getting into marriages and feeling like they want to break up and that they will break up at the first sign of trouble.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I think there is, you know, I think there is, a generation of women, you know, our age and a little older than us that grew up listening to music in relationships. And, you know, we were singing and jamming when it was on the radio, but then a few years passed and you're like, okay, you know, like my niece's generation would be like, yeah, no. And even I'm, you know, now I'm like, no, but then, it, you know, the stuff was out, like the song, having a piece of man is better than having no man at all.
We were
singing that stuff. And then there was this song. Oh, what is that song? Hello, Shirley. Hello, Barbara. This is Shirley. The man that you have, that's my man. I buy the clothes he wears, the car he drives. And I remember listening to that song. But, you know, back in the day, we would be, you know, doing the whole song with the attitude and everything. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember hearing that song on the radio maybe about 5 years ago. And I'm listening to the words of the song. And I'm like, why are you fighting for somebody that don't own anything, sweetie? He doesn't own anything, sweetie. Nothing. He's being kept. So but I think that speaks to what you're saying, Wena, is there's a younger generation that's like, yeah, no, I don't really want to settle for a piece of man.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I don't, you know, if I'm working to secure the bag, I think, you know, I think he or she should be able to secure the bag too and expand the bag.
Yeah.
You know,
or just be faithful.
Or just be faithful.
If I'm being faithful and I'm showing up, then you be faithful and show up. Or let's make a different arrangement. And and that's what you see. The younger generations are quicker to make a different arrangement and not necessarily buy into the institution of marriage as we know it, because they are willing to be upfront about the fact that they may not want that conventional way of doing things.
That's true. That's true. And it goes back to just looking back at how it was. Like you said, Claudette, the way it was is that we, in the past, you had a relationship or you stayed in a relationship because he was the provider. Mm-hmm. He was the one that gave you everything. And so it didn't matter that he had another family across town. Mm-hmm. And so now
that you knew about.
Exactly, that you were very aware of. But now, because of the level of empowerment and independence in our women and our men, there's difference. We're coming to the table, and when things are not right, you're right, we're bailing out. But I challenge this generation to, you know, really carefully analyze who you're getting into a relationship with.
Right?
Are their values the same as mine? Are we seeking after the same things? Take time to have that premarital counseling so that you can at least talk about some of those things that may come up in a relationship so that you won't be so quick to quit, you know, that you won't figure, oh, I put a year in, that's enough, I'm done, you know, and not fight for the relationship and step into it with being wiser. Of course, we listen to our elders and the things that they may have experienced, but not as a point of stagnation, but a point of growth. Go ahead.
I want to challenge us here, though, to understand that more and more people are going to premarital counseling. But when the older generation continues to push the ideas of conventional marriage and gender roles, the premarital counseling falls flat once you actually get into the marriage and you're confused about how to live in a modern day relationship with old school rules.
Yeah.
So when you don't have the right information coming to you, then you can go to premarital counseling all day long. It means that you need to actually get better relationship education so that you know what to expect in a marriage. And you know that you're picking a person right now and you're guessing to some extent that you're going to be able to evolve into.
Yep, that's right.
We're making a permanent decision about a person, almost knowing that they're going to evolve in many ways, and so are we. So what we're looking for needs to be, how compatible are we with changing together?
That's true.
Who are we
How compatible are we with changing together? That's good.
Yeah.
9 times out of 10, couples aren't getting that type of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We're picking based on how we feel the first couple of years, how the person makes us feel, how we're working together in the moment, but we're not learning how to look for certain markers and cues that help us to really see how to live and grow with a person. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're picking wrong. And it's not because we're doing anything wrong. We really do think that we're looking at a person's core values and we're making sure that we feel secure in real time. And we're also promising our partners that we're going to secure them over time. But we don't always realize that we should be looking for somebody that we're fine with evolving with, not somebody that we're fine with as long as they stay who they are.
Who they are. And that is so true, because what that's one of the disconnects in many relationships. You see this one person going in the direction of left and the other one still sitting there, you know, in their same old. And while the other person's continue to grow, and then they look back and they're like, you're still here. You're still back there when I'm over here. And so wanting to have that agreement, like you said, beforehand, and even as you're getting into the relationship, because maybe, you know, in the beginning, you were like, oh, I'll talk. Oh, yes, I'm here for you. We're going to grow together. And you say all those things, but then you get into it and life experiences, the things that you see every day causes you to change in such a way that this person is like, I don't like who you're changing into. And so then it's causing something, some another space of really having to sit and communicate with that person and say, where are we now? It may not look the same way as when we started.
So I want to throw out a couple of things that they said and kind of get some feedback from you ladies. It was a couple of things that I jotted down. One of the gentlemen said, women, I forget the first part of what he said, but he said, women get mad because you stopped doing the things you did right.
Mm.
They don't get mad about the things you did wrong. They get mad because of you stopped doing the things you did right. And then later on in the piece, when they were talking about Malcolm having problems in his marriage and maybe wanting to move, somebody said, a change of cities won't change your problems. You deal with your problems where you are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I want to get some thoughts on that from, do we really get mad because they stopped doing the things that they were doing right?
I think that goes for both genders, but that's a yes. Mm-hmm. In that when you start a thing, and this is an actual saying, don't start anything that you don't plan on continuing.
Yeah.
When you show up in a relationship very zealous and motivated to catch the partner,
mm-hmm.
and then unwilling to do the things to keep the partner, it does cause a problem. It is a gut punch when you wake up after the honeymoon phase and realize that your partner is no longer they're no longer interested in doing the things that they used to do to secure you. And on the flip side of that, some men may say of heterosexual relationships, well, you used to make sure that the hair was done, the nails were done, you weren't coming to bed in the flannel pajamas and the headscarf. You know, you made sure that you were appearing a certain way as well. You cooked more, you cleaned more, you know, you did all the things more.
Yeah.
But there's a bit of nuance to that, right? Well, sure, I did those things. And then the baby came, and we both stopped doing any of the things that we used to be able to do when we had the time and when we didn't know yet how hard it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So here it comes back to premarital counseling can take you through some scenarios about what it will be like, but you need a community of people traveling with you through the process.
Yep.
So that when you make choices like having children or building a family and taking on more responsibilities, you are reminded constantly that marriage is much more about giving and showing up for somebody than it ever will be about receiving.
Yeah, it truly is. It truly is. And learning how to navigate through those new spaces. Like, you know, like you said, having a child and what that changes in just our time together.
Right.
Our being able to communicate, our being able to have intimacy. Like, what does it look like now? All of that has to change. But we have to be willing to, one, accept the change and then change together. Like, sit down and have a conversation. Like, now our days are different. Now our nights are different. And I'm missing your touch and I'm missing, you know, just talking to you. And so how do we fit it in? What can we do to make our day more satisfying, not just for you, but for me too?
Oh, you know? But Renee, right there, in there, this is where the nuance comes in with looking for a partner.
Yes.
All those changes and new spaces are going to occur in every couple's relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have to be on the lookout as a partner for the mindset of a person that you're going to link up with, because when those changes occur, is that person going to stay in the same city with you and find new ways to troubleshoot these issues and be gracious when you can't give as much as you used to and still try to give as much as they used to when they realize that they've fallen off? Or are they going to say, Atlanta sounds like a good new place to start from?
Pack up
and move to Atlanta.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
That's true. That's true.
Right. But I think one of the, you know, speaking to what you guys were just saying, it kind of points to, leads me into what the older gentleman was saying to Malcolm about his wife, is that you know, you hadn't questioned her. You hadn't questioned mm-hmm. her. She was doing A, B, C, and D. You know, when you met her, she was involved in this and involved in that when you met her.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so you didn't question her until you started listening to those outside influences.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You started listening to those outside influences. And so I loved when he said to him, You don't ask a lawyer to do brain surgery.
Yes.
You know, why are you listening to men that don't have wives, that don't have mm-hmm. marriages, who are looking at your, you know, these outside influences are looking at your relationship based on how they handle relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And no one can prepare you for what that very new and sparkly relationship is going to feel like a couple years in.
Mm,
because it's Malcolm who says she has always been very disciplined with money, and she mm. runs the house and she keeps the kids and she does this and that. But now those things no longer make me smile.
Yeah.
They used to make me smile and now they don't. Newsflash, that's going to happen to everybody.
Yep,
that
yep.
a little bit of the gloss and the sheen yep, starts yep. to wear off of the things that used to bring you joy. If I eat too much cheesecake, I don't love it as much as I used to.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
When we get married, we're putting ourselves in a position to have our favorite thing every day.
Every day. Yeah.
And yeah. that's a blessing and a curse.
Absolutely.
Because you're having it every day.
Because you're having it every day. That doesn't mean that you don't love cheesecake anymore, mm-hmm. but you could stand a little bit less of it every once mm-hmm. in a while. It's good to be missed.
Yeah.
And to be able to miss something. Yeah. But domestic partnerships don't set us up to have that level of refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to figure out how to be okay and not question, have I lost the taste for this thing
mm-hmm.
just because we have it every day?
Right. Right.
Mm.
That's true. And just finding that space of, you know, just going back to the example of the cheesecake, you know, taking it and receiving it in different ways. Like,
yes.
you know,
can I add strawberry to it?
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, you know that it comes in some form, but right. you know what? I can just add some sprinkles or
right.
I can change, you know, I can do whatever I need to do in order for me to be able to digest it, in order for me to be able to receive it.
Right.
In order for me
but what I don't do is go to the bakery to buy another kind of cake.
Exactly. Exactly. Because this is what I love.
Right.
But why get rid of what I love?
Mm-hmm.
But why not just look at it with new eyes, you know, and seek that space where you can, you know, have that healing where you can just spark up or reignite what you think is doused out. Like
right.
work at it, make a commitment to talk to each other, to ask these questions so that you're not assuming or working on the past. Because this is what we do. We get in a relationship and we sit on what was instead of what is.
Mm-hmm.
And then because we're not asking, in some cases, either the husband or the wife is just sitting in a space where, well, you always did that way. And I just thought, well, if you would take time and sit and we can talk about these things and we can ask questions, because I no longer like chocolate. Mm. You know, now I like something else.
Right.
But that happens. You know how that happens? Because every day we're encountering other things. We're reading books. We're looking at TV. We're watching. We're going out into the workforce and we're coming back with all of the life experiences back to our spouse.
Yes.
And so we're not the same person when we left out in the morning. We're somebody else. And so I need to continually connect with you so that I can stay up on who you are and you can stay up on who I am.
Wow.
And wow. anyone who is not interested in taking in new information or accepting that every day you become a little different than the version that you were the day before is not necessarily a person for you if you're interested in growing and evolving.
Yep.
You have to find a person who's okay with not growing. Mm-hmm. There's somebody for everybody.
Yes, it is.
Right? You have to find the person who's okay with not growing and make sure that you're not attaching your cart to a person who seems to be interested in growing now because they're so curious about learning all of the things about you in the getting to know you stage.
Yeah.
We all go through a getting to know you stage where it seems like partners are both really good communicators.
Mm-hmm.
Because anybody can communicate about the past.
Mm-hmm.
I can articulate my history.
Mm-hmm.
I have lots to say about who I used to be and how I got to where I am.
Mm-hmm.
But then you attach your cart, you get married to this person.
And even what I'm doing now, I can communicate what I'm doing now.
Correct. Right. And it seems like I'm so articulate and I'm so expressive and I have so much to share. And then you get into a marriage or a relationship with the person and you think, oh, goodness, this person is not a communicator at all. They've stopped having these conversations. They're not as expressive and they don't want to talk about what's happening throughout their day, their week, or their future plans. Well, nothing is broken in them. They were never interested in doing that. But because they were talking about their past and catching you up on who they are because you just met them in the last 2 or 3 years, it appeared that they were more of a communicator than they really are. It appeared that they were a good date. It appeared that they were a conversationalist when in truth, they were only talking about information that they have rehearsed by sharing over and over again throughout life who they are and who they used to be.
I think that's important for us to then be, you know, more active listeners and more active questioners, kind of like we were talking about in episode one with Jamie, and asking a lot of questions, right? I think that's where we have to be more active in that, because I think you're right. You know, sometimes you can listen to people and they kind of, you know, they have the speeches prepared. They have the responses prepared, but you've got to be able to interview and interrogate a little different.
And give it time.
That's true. Give it time.
And give it time. That's it. Because in some ways, sometimes you can't see around that. You can't know how a person's going to settle into a relationship and live with you and come home, you know, from work and interact with you until you're actually doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can't figure that out sooner, but you can ask as many questions
as possible,
right? And you can try to see, oh, do they really only light up and come alive when they're talking about things that interest them or things that they know a lot about? But then when we're talking about new things, things that they don't know about, or they're giving me signs that they don't want to learn about many new things. They only want to know about the stuff that, you know,
they currently like.
That's what you're looking for.
Yeah, that's a sign. That's true.
That's good. So, ladies, before we had to wrap up, what was something in this piece that really caught you, that really, you know, that you jotted down to say, oh, that's interesting. I mean, I think I've kind of, you know, I don't think I have anything else. But I think the whole, you know, women get mad because you stop doing the things that were right in the change of the cities piece.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked I did like the fact that the older men in the barbershop were talking about, you know, their history and you know, the kind of the dreams that they had for themselves and being involved with younger men in their community who did not have, you know, fathers or men in the home, that kind of thing. I love that. And I liked the fact that one of the men talked about how when his father passed, his father had actually left a nice financial legacy.
Yes.
For his family. And yeah, I was impressed with that.
Yeah.
I agree. I think there were many things that we didn't touch on or we touched on very lightly. that were very educational mm-hmm. about this conversation. They did talk about some trauma. One of the men said that, you know, the thing that actually kept us together, I think, was the fact that we realized we couldn't have children. Mm-hmm. And he mm-hmm. did talk about the way that he worked did. Around that. We adopted the children. Mm-hmm. We became everybody's auntie and uncle. Mm-hmm. And we found yeah. a way to reframe it as these are all our kids until we have to give them back.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And
that's Renee, something though.
Yeah, right. That was, Renee had said earlier that these are the men that we want to hear from, the ones whose marriages lasted for 70 years, or they saw models of their parents' marriage lasting for 70 years and their marriages lasted for 40 years. There were some things that they got right.
Right. Right.
And they didn't go deep. Mm-hmm. As I said, you probably won't get too deep in a barbershop talk.
Yeah. Yeah.
To talk about how painful it was when that loss occurred, when they mm-hmm. realized we won't be able to have biological kids. But there was a nugget there.
That's true. That's true.
In understanding that we didn't let that thing break us up. Mm-hmm. We figured out a way together to make the family that we wanted and be pillars in this community.
Mm-hmm. Right. And when you think about the things that can disrupt or break up a marriage, that's a big one.
A big
yeah,
one.
Yeah, huge.
That's a big yeah. one. So, yeah.
A big one.
That's that blind change that you didn't expect.
Yeah.
That, as earlier you mentioned, but you learn how to navigate through it together.
Correct.
Together.
But you got to show up willing to say, yes. This is painful and mm-hmm. we have to do something about it to stay together and move together. Forward through it.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. I agree.
Yeah. And again, I like mention of men standing in the gap when other men were absent, right? There was and doing it in a way I would assume where there was no, you know, there was no assumption of us going to have a relationship because I'm coming to get the boys to get taking the haircut or taking the football or whatever.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Right. Mm-hmm. It's that village.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I would also point out here that the difference between the way the men very lightly got on the first guy who was dating Sheila and had the son by Sheila versus the way the men were able to very head on confront Malcolm. The end about yeah. his marriage.
Yeah.
It's something to learn there
mm-hmm.
that when you know people's personalities, you figure out how to talk to them in ways that they can receive things.
Mm-hmm.
So initially we got on the guys for not saying, no, you need to be accountable.
Right.
You need to talk to Sheila about the ways that you've messed mm-hmm. up and do this, that, and the other.
Right.
I think those men assess that this is the way we have to deal with him. He's still in the knucklehead phase.
Right, right,
he's
right.
Happy he's that
running
he's out
of the, that's right.
the sowing his royal oats phase. Uh-huh. And we're going to meet him where he is, right? Mm-hmm. But then with Malcolm, they were like, bruh, this is the woman you prayed for. And mm-hmm. you know what? You have something to do with the fact that she used to be heavily in the church and mm-hmm. now she's not teaching Sunday school anymore. You have had a part in the way that she has changed and evolved and maybe not for the better. Mm-hmm. You need to be accountable for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And they challenged him. She's a good woman and you're yes. a good man. So why can't y'all continue to be good together?
Yes.
Figure it out. Go back. Figure it out.
Yep.
Instead of what they, you know, were telling the other guy, like, you stay in your mess. you gotta deal with it and you just gotta
right.
take your cake for all you've done and you have to learn how to
need to get that whooping.
Yes, peace, yeah. sugar, and kindness. That was what they were throwing out to him. But knowing and right. recognizing that Malcolm had values, that Malcolm, you know, wanted something great, not just for himself, but in the relationship and pushing right. him in that
different
way.
Headspace. Yeah. I like how Lena said he was still a knucklehead. So knuckleheads, yeah. they got to take right. that whipping a little longer.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and it sounds like Sheila was the one to give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
I would say here that I would love to have a man present for this conversation to yeah. chastise us and correct us on some of the things that we may be getting.
right. You don't know. That's not
what it is. Like y'all thinking and talking like women. Well, yeah.
Exactly.
You're not going to say that. Yeah. That's right.
Let me just own right here that we know that we have taken a sneak peek into something that we may not be able to decode properly, but we sure did try.
Right.
We appreciate that talk.
Exactly. So final thoughts, ladies.
Well, I would just highlight here that I think there was actually a lot of brilliance in this writing. And there were a lot of things that you could pick up about how the men decided that they would talk about certain topics and what they wouldn't say. Mm-hmm. But they were effective nonetheless in encouraging, supporting, and protecting each other in this conversation.
Mm-hmm. And it would go back to it takes a village. And so the village of the barbershop was a space where you can grow and take things and be able to move forward in your life. Whatever choices you made from it, at least you've got some wisdom, nuggets of wisdom, nuggets of experience, nuggets of knowledge, and it can take you further. And now, as Maya Angelou said, if you know better, you can do better.
Right.
And so challenge you to stand up.
And feel like you can come back and show your face in the barbershop a week or two from now. We can't go so hard on you that you never want to come back. Right. You got to come back.
Yeah, because we still want to cut your hair now.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. So I will say this. I love the idea of having a man weigh in on the conversation on this piece. So I think what we might do is for season three, bring in another part of this piece, because the other part of this piece is you heard the men ask one particular gentleman who his team was. And he said, you know, it was the Dolphins.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so as the piece kind of continues, you discover that particular man is someone that the older men in the barbershop are very familiar with, and he reveals himself to them. And so perhaps what we'll do is bring this piece, that part of this piece, back for season three and invite a couple of men to join the panel for that discussion, because that would be like... that would be really interesting.
That would be fire.
Right? Because I'm sure they would be like, no.
That's not.
No.
No, woman. Let me tell you how the man's perspective really
is. What you're not going to do is tell us how we think. Right? Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much, ladies. Episode 4 is up next, and we'll be doing a piece that's a really fun little piece, but I love the thing that you guys, I was like, okay, I don't see it, but I love the things that you guys pulled out of that piece, and that piece is called Sunday Driving. So we'll talk to you about that next episode. Thank you so much, ladies.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
A pleasure, as always.
We'll talk to you next time.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
When you were young, you'd scribble a story on notebook paper and proudly read it to an audience of stuffed animals. Just like that, you planted the seed of being a published author. Let that vision grow with Pecan Tree Publishing, a self-publishing company designed by authors for authors. Pecan Tree Publishing works with authors in an array of genres and our inclusive packages featuring editing, printing, publicity, and marketing. Get additional information at www.pecantreebooks.com. Thoughts, comments, and observations by the host, coaches, counselors, and therapists are not to be construed as personal advice or direction. Thanks for listening to another creatively powerful and engaging episode of The Griot's Remedy. Be sure to tune in next week for new insight and discussion that gives you some things to consider as you take a look in your proverbial mirror. The Griot's Remedy, where fiction mirrors real life and everything is up for discussion. Your host is E. Claudette Freeman. Connect with her at www.eclaudetteliterary.com. For the Griot's Remedy episode, cast, panel, advertising, or resource information, email us at bookloudly@pecantreebooks.com or find us at www.pecantreebooks.com.